Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Turning to the second line from the top of Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin, the topic heading that you will notice in the outside margin under the heading Nosei, meaning topic, reads Reishis Hagez Eino Noheg Elo Berechelim. We know from the Mishnah that as opposed to Zro L'chaim V'keva, which is binding by all kosher variety animals, the halacha concerning the shearings, the tithe given to the kohen from one's wool shearings, applies only to rechelim, to sheep. The Gemara will be occupied in finding out what is the source for that particular limitation. The Gemara, second line from the top, Reishis Hagez, Eino Noheg Elo Berechelim. The tithing of the shearings is limited to sheep. Mino Hani Mili. From where do we know this? That it regards sheep and not goats, for example. Omar of Chisto, Asyo Giza Giza. There is a word comparison using the word Giza. Ksiv Hocha, Reishis Gez Tzoncha Titen Lo. We should point out, possibly before we go further, that the reason for the Gemara asking from where do we know that it's limited to sheep, which the Mishnah teaches, is because in the Torah itself the word tzon appears. Tzon is an expression that could include goats as well. So therefore the question is very well understood, it's very pointed, in that on the one hand the Torah says tzoncha, the Mishnah says only Rechelim. So how do you resolve that? Therefore, we're saying it's resolved through a word comparison. You have in the Pasuk in Dvorim, which features the halacha of the shearings, the tithe of the shearings, the word geiz. Uksiv hosam umi geiz kvosai yischameim. That is a Pasuk in Iov. Ma lahalon kvosim, just like in Iov, the word kvosim appears, which is a reference to sheep. Af kan, so too with regard to the Torah pasuk, which ordains the tithe granted to the kohanim from the wool shearings, it says here too kvosim. So just like in the pasuk in Iov, you've got together with the word geiz, you have the word keves. So too in the pasuk dealing with the wool tithe, you have the word geiz, which is to be understood as referring to the keves aspect of tzon. As we said, the word tzon includes sheep and goats. How do I know to limit it to sheep? Because of the word geiz that appears. The Gemara asks, V'nelev giza giza mi b'chor. If we're already involving ourselves with word comparisons, with gzera shavas, you find the word giza in the context of firstborn. And in the context of firstborn animals, the firstborn male animal is given to a kohen. That's the topic of b'chor. And if that be the case, we would then say, just like by b'chor, you're not limited to sheep, so too by the shearings, we will not be limited to sheep. The Sanya, the Brisa continues, you can see we have a Tanaic source, as you see a section in a frame. The framed sections of the Gemara markings are Tanaic sources. We also have a question that lasts several lines, and that's indicated by the long question marking that you see to the left-hand side of the Gemara text, a kuf that's encircled with a vertical dashed vertical line, a vertical descending dashed line, all of the lines opposite this form the question. So the Brisa opens up, this Tanaic source opens up with a pasuk, Lo sa'avod b'vechor shorecha v'lo sa'goyiz b'chor tzonecha, which tells us that one shall not work with firstborn animals, nor shall one shear them. So you have the word togoz in this pasuk, and ein li ela shor bavod of its own begiza. From looking at the pasuk and its bechor restrictions, I would think that only oxen are forbidden to work with, and sheep are forbidden to shear. Minay li tein ha'amur shelzeh bozeh v'shamur shelzeh bozeh. From where do I know that the restrictions featured with one apply to the other? For example, one would not be allowed to cut the hairs from an ox firstborn, nor would one be able to work with a sheep that is a firstborn. Talmud Lomar, the answer is, the pasuk says, Lo savod v'lo sagoiz. So from that, we learn that it applies to both as well. The question that we are asking is, well, just like in the Bechor Pasuk, you have the word lo sagoz, giza, the root of that is giza, and you have with the shearings the word giza, and just like in the Pasuk dealing with Bechor, all kosher variety animals are included, therefore, maybe one should tithe the hair that one shears from any of these animals, and not as the Mishnah says, limit ourselves to rechelim, to sheep. Omar kro, titen loy veloy lesakoy. The pasuk that deals with the tithe to the Kohanim, Devarim Perek Yudches Pasuk Dalet, says titen lo, give it to him, to the person, for personal use, for clothing use, something that a person uses on his body, and not for making sacks. Sako is like in English, sackcloth. Shearings or hair from oxen, as was suggested in this word comparison, hair from oxen isn't used for making clothing. It's used for making sackcloth. And I know from the pasuk that instructs us to give the tithe of shearings to Kohanim, it says titen lo, means for clothing purposes and not for sackcloth. So that, with that, I would be able to understand or exclude cow shearings. The Gemara asks, elo me'ato, well, if that be the case, that the pasuk is the pasuk of Rishis Hagez, the tithe you give to the Kohanim is for clothing, well then notso shel izim l'chayev. There should be a requirement of using goat hair, of giving from goat hair to the Kohanim. Rashi points out, because goat hair is used to make some type of nice looking garments. It figures in garment production. So, and yet the Mishnah says that the tithe is limited to sheep hair, wool. The Gemara answers, Bo'inon giza v'leka. In order to conform to the tithe expectations or requirements, you need to have hair removed through the shearing process. The method of removal is of concern, and the method of removal must be called giza. Giza is characteristic of sheep hair removal or wool removal, whereas by goats, the hair from goat skin is plucked out and not shorn. It's like the normal way to remove goat hairs is through a process that would not be referred to as giza. The Gemara asks, well, man shamis lehi svara, who is it that focuses on the careful or literal meaning of psukim? Just like we said now that we're focusing on giza, referring to a very specific literal process, and not just say, let's say, hair cutting, but a specific process known as hair shearing. Which Tana approaches psukim with that type of focused explanation? The answer to that is Reb Yossi. Reb Yossi this is characteristic of Reb Yossi. The Gemara will point this out later on, in fact. But right now, we're saying it's Reb Yossi. But being that it's Rabbi Yossi HaMoldi, Rabbi Yossi B'midi D'Urche, but the same Rabbi Yossi concedes that when the Pasuk makes reference, let's say in this case to shearing, it really is referring to any hair removed in its normal way. So that in goat hair removal, if, let us say, goat hair is normally plucked, so since that's its normal way of removal, the plucking of goat hairs would be referred to as its giza. Therefore, since Rabbi Yossi also takes into consideration midi d'urche, normal way of removal, if the Torah is explaining or telling us that you tithe from gizos, in the case of goat hair removal, even though they don't use a tool called a wool shears, nevertheless, the method of hair removal of a goat, when done normally, would be called its giza. And if that be the case, so then there should be a goat hair tithe requirement as well. And we know the Mishnah says otherwise. The Mishnah says it's limited to sheep. Ela, so we come up with a second approach, namely an approach that doesn't follow the word comparison, but another approach. Ela kida omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. How do we know that we're talking about sheep, wool, and that's it? The Pasuk says, in the context of, in other words, in the proximity of the Reishis Hagez, it says, Lamod l'shores. That's a Pasuk. Dovor haroi l'sherus. That is a teaching of Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi in a different context. Hocha nami, so too in our discussion, what is chayev in Reishis Hagez, we will say dovar haroi l'sherus, something that is fit for sherus. We didn't explain what sherus is. Sherus means service in the Beis HaMikdash. The only material that would be used in the clothing manufacture of Kohanim for the service in the Beis HaMikdash that is associated with animals would be wool. Wool from sheep. And because of this pasuk, Lamo the Shores, which is in the context or the proximity of the pasuk dealing with Reishis Hagez, I understand that we are limited to wool because of Lamo the Shores. Elo Giza Giza Lamayasa. Well, what about the original word comparison? What do we learn from that? You notice at the to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, there's an arrow. This can be aligned with an arrow you saw earlier on the same side of the Gemara text. That is pointing to the line where Giza, Giza appeared. So, being that we are learning wool, sheep wool, from Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi's teaching of Lamud L'Shores, and not from Giza, Giza, the Gemara wants to know what is Giza, Giza used for. Answer, L'chitana debay Rabbi Shmuel. For the teaching coming from the school of Rabbi Shmuel, the Tana debay Rabbi Shmuel, the following Tanaic source was taught there. Kvosim shitsimron kashav tur mirishis hagez. Sheep whose wool is coarse, as opposed to soft, is exempt. We call them unusual type of sheep that produce a coarse wool. They would be exempt from Reishis Hagez. Shenemar umigez kvosai yischamein. So I have in this pasuk umigez kvosai yischamein, which we featured above as our basis for the word comparison. So here you see the same pasuk appearing, but for to teach us this halacha that just like in this pasuk, gaze. The shearings of sheep is for yischamein, for heat, for producing warm clothing. Warm clothing, warm wool clothing, are produced from soft, or we'll say non-coarse wool. Coarse wool would not produce clothing that are successful in producing warmth. And as a result of this pasuk and the word gaze that appears here, I compare that with the gaze word in the shearings, the tithe from shearings, and I conclude that it has to be a type that the only kind of wool that is bound to be tithed is wool that would produce warm clothing. The Gemara goes on presenting two Tanaic sources that seem to be contradictory. We've labeled them Aleph and Beis. Tani Chada, one source says Goizes es ha'izim, v'shotef es ha'rechelim potur. One who would, let's say, take the shearings from a goat, and the shotef es ha'rechelim is a case where hair from sheep become detached as they are, let's say, the animals are washed or rinsed, they're exposed to water, and this causes, Rashi talks about them going, being in a river, probably for beautifying them, or washing them off, and in that event, their hairs are removed, hairs fall off. Those hairs, if one were to gather them, would be, as this source says, exempt from the Reishis Hagez tithe. V'tanyo idach, the second source says, Hagoizis Hazizim Potter, on that count, these two sources are the same. V'shoytif esu rechelim chayav, but the hairs that became dislodged in the water are part of the realm of Reishis Hagez. Well, there's a contradiction, and we've dashed underlined the contradictory parts, the issue concerning the shotef es ha'rechelim. Lo kashya, there is no contradiction per se, it reflects two different opinions. Ha rabbanon, the second source which was willing to mechayev, to obligate the wool from the water contact in Reishis, I guess, is according to the rabbanon. Ha rabbiosi, the first source that said the Shaitiv Esur Chelim is potter, is exempt, that conforms to Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Rabbi Yossi is someone who is, as we alluded to before, Dayik Lishna Dekra. He looks at the careful or specific meaning of the Pasuk. And in our case, the Pasuk source talks about Gaze Tzoncha, the shearing of sheep, and not the shedding of hair, but rather a shearing action, an active action done by a person. As a result of that, Rabbi Yossi understands that the pasuk in being mechayev shearings is talking about hair that's actively removed, and we might as well add in its normal way, not the shedding of hair, which is not an active removal, but the shedding of hair in water would not be bound. That's as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned, and hence the first source here, which said Shedus Rehmus Potter, could be associated with him, with Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara now brings a source in which you see Rabbi Yossi being Medayik Lishna Dekra, being careful and precise in his approach to Psukim. This source deals with a tithe left in fields for the poor. It's called leket. The pasuk says leket kitzircha, velo leket kituf. Kosir is a ksira, is a process of harvesting grains, and therefore the grains, let us say, that fall by the side when one is harvesting, those are called leket. So you leave them for the poor. And that is so if you were harvesting as opposed to plucking the grains. That's kituf, lo leket kituf. Rashi says that's a kotef biyodov shibole komoso. So if you're plucking them by hand and grains and stalks fall away, that won't be obligated in the leket obligation. Namely, they won't be obligated to be left to the poor. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ein leket ela haba machmas kotzir. Leket is that which comes only, leket results, or the legal obligation of leket results only from that which you do during a formal harvest process. Well, that in effect is the same as what the Tanakhama said, the first opinion said as well, when he excluded Leket Kituf. The Gemara asks, Rabbi Yossi Hainu Tanakhama. Rabbi Yossi is redundant. He's saying the same thing as the Tanakhama, so what do I need Rabbi Yossi for in this source? The Gemara answers, there really aren't two opinions in this source. Kula Rabbi Yossi, the whole source is in accordance with Rabbi Yossi. V'hachi Kotoni, and thusly we are to understand the source. She Rabbi Yossi Omer, the Shin indicates a continuation. In other words, it was an opening comment in the source that said, Leket Kitzircha v'lo Leket Kituf, namely, the stalks that fall away, if you're plucking them by hand, are not obligated in Leket. Now, why is that? She Rabbi Yossi Omer, this is an offering of an explanation. It's just the continuation of this of the opening phrase. She Rabbi Yossi Omer ain Leket elo habo machmas kotzir. The Leket obligation arises only when you're doing a formal harvesting process and not a plucking of grains. And we might as well say that as the Gemara will point out in his next line, that the plucking of grains is an unusual way of harvesting them. Amale Ravacho Bredu Ravolo Ravashi Moide Rabbi Yossi Bemidi De Urche. Rabbi Yossi, however, will concede that there would be an obligation if something is removed through its normal harvesting process, as is illustrated right now. The Sanya. Rabbi Yossi Omer. Rashi doesn't have the opening words Rabbi Yossi Omer in his Girsa, but we're to understand this as a Rabbi Yossi source. Katsir. The Torah uses the word katsir. Amy Ella Kotsir, Oker Minayan. From where do I know that items that fall away while you're doing Akira? Oker is a process of removing things from their roots, which is characteristic of Adoshim, Rashi says. Adoshim is a type of vegetation who is, when it's harvested, it's harvested through uprooting it. So where do I know that a din of leket would apply to adoshim that are harvested through akira? Talmud Lomar liktsor. The word liktsor is used in the pasuk. Tolesh minayin. Talmud Lomar Bekutzrecha. So you have the repetition of this word, ktsira word, in different forms, which serves to include this method of harvesting as well. Tolesh. Tolesh is a removal by hand, not like the adoshim, namely not with its roots, but it's a plucking out, which is the normal way of harvesting a vegetation called pulin. So if one does a normal harvest, normal process in harvesting different, let's say the normal way of doing the harvest for different kinds of vegetations, which result in different methods of harvesting, each one, provided you're doing it in its normal way, will have its own leket requirement. With someone approaching a vegetation and removing it in an unusual way for that particular crop. For example, hand plucking wheat is not the normal way to do it, so if one does that and stalks fall aside, there will be no requirement of leket. Amale Ravino L'Ravashi, Af Anan Nami Tanina. We have this taught in a Mishnah as well. In other words, the information that we saw in a brisa, we have this backed up in an explicit fashion by in a mishnah, which shows that the brisas that were quoted have credence and have reliability, because a mishnah teaches the same thing, namely that Rabbi Yossi concedes that if the normal way of harvesting a particular crop is done, so then the tithe will apply to it. the tithe we're going to make reference to in a moment is the peah tithe. In the context of peah, which is a corner of the field, this tithe also is dependent on your harvesting whatever is in question in its normal way. The source says, Malbanos Bitzolim Shebein Hayerek. These are rows of Bitzolim. Bitzolim are often translated as onions that grow between rows of vegetables. So that you have alternating rows, vegetables and onions, alternating. Rabbi Yossi Omer. We should point out that the halacha of peah doesn't apply to all vegetation, but only applies to that type of vegetation that one gathers up and stores for long periods of time. It's nishmar umachnisa lekiyum. This is not the case with, let us say, things like lettuce and tomatoes, which are not stored up for long stretches. Bitzolim are. So we will discuss peah only in the context of the bitzolim. However, in this scenario, we don't have one large field of bitzolim, but rather they appear in alternating rows. So Rabbi Yossi Omer peah mikol echad ve'echad. One must leave a separate edge of the row for the poor of each row separately. The Chachamim me'achas al hakol. The Chachamim say that designating one complete row, that we'll say, or as payoff for all the other rows is sufficient. Namely, according to the Chachamim, the fact that there is an intermittent vegetable growing doesn't create a separation, so to speak, between the rows of onions, and they're all viewed as one field. We don't have to digress so much into the details concerning peah, but what we do want to emphasize here is that you see Rabbi Yossi mentioning or referring to a peah requirement by Bitzolim. Now, Bitzolim are harvested through a hand removal, as opposed to the way grains are removed through using a hand sickle or other type of cutting instrument. And yet you see that there is a payout requirement, like we discussed before, a leket requirement. Here it's a different type of tithe, but it's a tithe for the poor called payout. And even though you don't do what's called a textbook ketzirah to it, you do, with regard to the bitzolim, you would do it hand removal, we'll say. Nevertheless, that's its normal way of being harvested. That's the normal way you harvest bitzolim. And therefore, this is called midi de'urche. Therefore, there is a payah requirement with regard to the bitzolim. Continuing in the Gemara. V'kamahu meruba. Our Mishnah mentioned that as opposed to Zroa Chaim Akeva, which applies even to an individual animal, the tithe of shearings applies only if you have meruba. Meruba means numerous. But what does numerous mean? So in our Mishnah we saw Beis Shammai speak about two animals and Beis Hillel speak about five. Before learning the Gemara, we have a Nosei Mivneh heading in anticipation of triangles that will appear shortly in the Gemara. We have written in the margin under the Nosei Mivneh heading, featuring the triangle, Deos, we'll see opinions or approaches, Lahasbir, Eich, Beis Hillel, Royim, Eaposuk, Chomesh Tzon, Asuyos, how do Beis Hillel see from the Pasuk that says Chomesh Tzon, Asuyos, which is a Pasuk in Sefer Shmuel, the ain mitzvahs rachis hages b'pochos mi chamisha tzon. How do we learn from that pasuk in Shmuel that's a reference to the mitzvah of rachis hages, which would then get Beis Hillel to his conclusion that rachis hages applies only to five and not fewer animals. So the Gemara begins. V'kamahu meruba bishlamo lebeis Shammai. As far as Beis Shammai is concerned, Tarti Nami Ikru Tzon. The word Tzon, as it appears in the Torah, is a word that is appropriate even if you have two. tzon is an expression that has a plural connotation to it. So, grammatically speaking, it's a word in the plural. But two also fulfills that expectation of plural. Elo the Beis Hillel my taima. How does Beis Hillel come to the conclusion that it's five sheep, that only if one has five sheep to shear would there be a racious, I guess, requirement? Omar Rav Kahana, Omar Kro. The Pasuk says in Sefer Shmuel, Chomesh Tzon Asuyos. And from that we learn, She'osos Shnei Mitzvahs, that when you get to five Tzon, you are now going to be obligated in two mitzvahs, whereas prior to having five, you wouldn't have been obligated in two mitzvahs. You would have been required only in one mitzvah. Namely, if you have less than five, you would have been obligated only in the mitzvah of matonis, the Zerah Chai Mekeva, which we said applies even to one sheep. But now that I have five, the Pasuk says, five tzon asuyos. Now you have mitzvos in the plural. She'osos shnei mitzvos. That when you have five tzon, so they, in the collective, they produce two mitzvos. One rachis, I guess, and two matonos. The Gemara asks, well, emo b'chora u'matonos. If you're looking for a situation of multiple mitzvos, so who says we're talking about shearings? Maybe we're talking about firstborn, b'chora and matanas. Maybe that's what the pasuk in Shmuel Aleph is referring to. The Gemara answers, no. B'chora, chadomi lo mechaiva. If you're talking about the mitzvah of firstborn, even one animal can be bound to that mitzvah. And if you have one animal and it's bearing its first child, its first male child, that will be the mitzvah b'chor. I don't need five for that. Ulatamech, well, according to you, who wants to insist on this pasuk of Chamish Tzon Atzuyos teaching me about, now that I have five, I will now have two mitzvahs, namely Reishis Hagez and Matonis. Well, ulatamech matonos chado milo mechayva. Well, for matonos, do you need five for matonos? No. Even if you have one animal, it will be sufficient. So, if you were willing to say that chomesh tzon atzuyos is a reference to the two mitzvahs of reishis agez and matonos, and you know fully well that matonos can be accomplished even with one mitzvah, even with one animal, so then why not say that the multiple mitzvahs are matanos and bechora? This doesn't show me conclusively that we're referring to reishis hagez. Elo omar Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi looks at the same pasuk with a slightly different twist. Asuyos, the word asuyos doesn't mean that you simply have two mitzvahs now, but rather, Shema'asois es ba'alehen v'oimreis lo kum asei mitzvah. The asuyos means that now that I have five, it's as if we are being told, now get up and do a new mitzvah that you were not chayav in before. So what's the new mitzvah that you were not chayav in before? That's Reishis Hagez, because as far as Matonos and Bechora are concerned, those I was bound to earlier. So what could the new mitzvah possibly be? So it is Reishis Hagez, and Rashi explains that we're coming to that conclusion because in the case of Reishis Hagez, the word tzon appears, which is a word that implies pluralness, as opposed to the psukim that dealt with bechora and matonos. The individual word like shor appeared in the case of bechora, or the word se, which appears together with the word shor by matonos. Therefore, those mitzvahs I understand could have been fulfilled even with a singular animal. what is the mitzvah in which pluralness appears? That's by Reishis Hagez, where the word tzon is found. And when does that mitzvah kick in? That we learn from this pasuk, that when you have five, chamesh tzon asuyos. Now that I have five, I'm now mechuyev in a new mitzvah that I wouldn't have been mechuyev in before. And once again, that's a reference to the Reishis Hagez. Tanya, we have a Tanaic source which also introduces a new discussion. We have this featured as a topic heading on the outside margin, the no say. Shitas Rabbi Yossi, the Reishis Hagez, Bedalid Son, Be'arba Tzon. A new Tanaic opinion that Reishis Hagez, one becomes obligated in that if he has four sheep to shear. Not like Beis Shammai who said two, and not like Beis Hillel that said five. So the Brisa begins, Debei Rabbi Shmuel, Tanya, Debei Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, Omer. Mishum Oviv. The Rabbi Yossi quotes his father. Let us read this more accurately. Debei Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, Omer Mishum Oviv. In the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, it was said in the name of Rabbi Yossi, Arba, the number of animals, number of sheep that obligate the owner to Reishis Hagez is four. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Ve'arba tzon tachas haseh. In a completely different context, this pasuk appears. However, the word tzon appears together with the word arba. That for our purposes, that connects us with Reishis Hagez, which also used the word tzon, coming to the conclusion that only when you have four will you use the term tzon. Tanya, Omar Rebbe, Ilmole Divrayim, Divrei Torah, V'Divrei Bribi Kabbalah, Anan Divrei Bribi Shomin. If the words or the teachings of the others, like Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, were from the Torah, and Bribi is a reference to the great man, that's what Rebbe calls Rabbi Yossi, Bribi, a title of distinction. And the words of Rabbi Yossi were Kabbalah. Kabbalah, the Rashi explains, is something derived from the Nevi'im, from the prophets, as opposed to the five books of the Torah. The five books of the Torah, generally speaking, we say have much greater legal strength than the books of the prophets. So Rebbe is saying something quite extreme, that had their words been Torah and Rabbi Yossi's Kabbalah, Anan Divrei Bribi Shomin, we would have opted to follow Rabbi Yossi's opinion. If you'll ask why, the answer to that is the Havamina is because Rabbi Yossi is a type of, we'll call it Machria. Machria is a term literally that means to cause something to weigh down. If you have a balance scale, you have two equal items on a balance scale, and you put an additional item on one side of the balance scale, it will then weigh down, that's called machria. So the thought right now is that Rabbi Yossi represents a machria, something that settles the matter. For Kol Shekain, the source goes on, and all the more so, Shedivrayim Divrei Kabbalah, V'Divrei Rabbi Yossi, Beribi Divrei Torah. And all the more so, we will follow Rabbi Yossi in this case where the words of the other opinions were based on psukim from Nevi'im, and Rabbi Yossi is based on a pasuk from the Torah itself. So that all the more so, I will follow Rabbi Yossi's approach of four. The Gemara now asks, it challenges the unwritten point that we made before. And the unwritten point we made just before was that Rebbe was going to go with Rabbi Yossi under all circumstances because he represented something called a machria. However, technically speaking, a machria does not mean what we thought. but let's say this a little more accurately. To say that Reb Yossi is a machria is simply inaccurate. There is a concept of machria, and that concept will appear, for example, if you have two people arguing with one another, and a third opinion comes along and sides with one of the two opinions, that third opinion would be the one who settles matters. He's the machria. There is a more elaborate explanation than what we are saying right now. This is found in Rashi, but for the sake of, let's say, brevity and sufficient illustration of the issue, what we are saying will suffice. Being that that's the true definition of machria, a third opinion that adds weight to one of the two original opinions, Reb Yossi doesn't do that over here. Reb Yossi is not conceding to either Beis Shammai, who said 2, or Beis Hillel, who said 5. He is saying 4. Hence, the Gemara asks, well, you know, being that that's the case, why would Rebbe have thought to go with Reb Yossi based on that assumption? The Ha'amar Mor, it has been taught, Ein Hachra Shlishis Machras, a third distinct, separate opinion, does not constitute a Machria. As we said before, a Machria would be the third, we'll say the third deciding opinion, but by virtue of the fact that he was joining up with one of the two existing opinions. Here, you don't have that case. So why? What was motivating Rebbe to go with Reb Yossi's opinion? What was offering such strong motivation to Rebbe? The Gemara answers: Amar Reb Yochanan, mipi Shmua Amra. Reb Yossi said his opinion based on an oral tradition that he had from many generations before. Mipi Chagai Zechariah Malachi. Even though Reb Yossi lived many generations later, he had a tradition that was conveyed from the prophets that lived at the end of the period of prophecy, Chagai Zechar Malachi, that it is 4 tzon, 4 sheep, that is Mechayev Reishis Hagez. The topic heading that accompanies our new sugya is on the side of the Gemara, the Nosei, Deos Amoroyim, different Amoraic opinions, b'mahi hashiur kol shein d'omu rabbonim b'mishnah. In our Mishnah, we had a number of different opinions as to how many tzon generate the chiyuv of reishis hagez. The Chachomim said, and we wrote that in here between the lines, Chachomim omrim, chomesh rechelis gozizos kol shein. And as we mentioned, the Gemara will now focus on what is meant by kol shein. And to explain that, we will have numerous opinions. We've, as you scan ahead in the Gemara, you will notice we've numbered up to 4. So, number one, the Gemara asks, "V'kama kol shehein?" Omar Rav, he's the first opinion. Mona upras. Mona upras is a certain weight of wool that is explained as 37 and a half sloim, where all 5 sheep together produce 37 and a half sloim, or monopras. Ubuvad shu mechumashos. Another restriction, according to Rav, is that each one also happens to produce a minimum of 7 and a half sela of shorn wool. Once again, sela is a weight. Ushmuel Omar, a second opinion, the Chachomim that said kol shehein means shishim. 60 sloim of wool, the noisin sela achas lekoin. And now Shmuel adds a new point, the amount that is to be given to the kohen, 1 sela, which is in effect is 1/60th of the shearings, would be given to the kohen. The 1/60th is in this context, that we're not going to say that as a broad amount required. All Shmuel is saying is that 1 sela is the amount that one is expected to do to the Kohen. And that, as far as the Chachomim are concerned, that will become an obligation only if your shearings amount to 60 sloim. Rabo bar bar chano om Rabbi Yochanan. Sheish. What the Chachomim mean when they say, Chomesh, Rechilas, Gozuzos, Kolshein, it's 5 sheep. the shearings of which weigh 6 sloyim. La kohen chamisha ve'echod loy. And as far as how that would be distributed, if you shore 6 sela of wool, the kohen would get 5 of the 6 sela, and you, the owner, would keep 1. The Rashi adds, as far as Rabbi Yochanan is concerned, even if the gizus would be 1,000 sloyim, 5 to the kohen would be enough. Ula Amar Abelazar, a fourth opinion. Kol Shehein Shoninu. The expression Kol Shehein means a minuscular amount, meaning even if all the gizus together were 1 sela, there would be an obligation of Reishis Hagez according to Ula's version of the Chachamim. So Ula, Amar Rabbi Lazar, focuses on the literal use of the term Kol Shehein. As far as the other opinions are concerned, which gave much larger amounts, why did the term Kol Shehu appear? So the reason for that is because there were other opinions that suggested much more than that, so that the opinions cited here are, being that they are less, they use the term Kol Shehein. Tanan. We have a Tanaic source, the Kama Noisin Lo, how much is to be given to the Kohen. We've dashed under a Noisin Lo to focus our attention on the fact that this source is not dealing with what the numbers we've been dealing with primarily beforehand, which were primarily focused on how much wool will generate the obligation. But here the issue is how much is given to the Kohen, even though we did make some references to that in the Gemara just before. But in general, the numbers that we were dealing with were how much is shorn in order to have even the beginning of the obligation. Here, the issue is how much is given to the Kohen. This tells us, Mishkal Chamesh Sloyim Behudo, Shein Eser Sloyim Begolio. It's 5 sela in weight of wool in the Yehuda region, which is equal to 10 sloyim in Golil, and that's because in Golil the sloyim were half the size as the Yehuda region sloyim. So using the sela of Golil, you would have to have 10 of them in weight of wool. Bishlamo l'Rav Rabbi Yochanan Nicha. As far as the opinions of Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, this quote from the Mishnah does not pose any difficulty. And the reason for that is, Rav, for example, didn't speak at all about how much is given to the Kohen. This source deals with that. In other words, this source is dealing with a different topic, so there's no challenge to Rav. As far as Shmuel is concerned, as far as Rabbi Yochanan, let's correct ourselves, as far as Rabbi Yochanan is concerned, also things are fine, because Rabbi Yochanan said you give 5 sloyim to the Kohen, just like the Mishnah. Elo l'Shmuel Rabbi Lozer Kashya. But according to Shmuel, who said you give 1 sela to the Kohen, and according to Rabbi Lozer, who said that the sum total of all the gizos all together is just 1 sela, the amount given to the Kohen in this source is much more than what they said. The Gemara asks, Uletameich, and according to you, who says things work out according to Rav and Rabbi Yochanan, Ule Rav Minicha, and in truth, is it such smooth sailing for Rav? For Rav, who Shmuel Demet Javayu, Reishis Hagez Beshishim. Rav and Shmuel teach that the amount given to the Kohen is 1/60th. 1/60th of whatever was the basic amount that you sheared off the animals. So it's true. We pointed out that Shmuel is difficult. That is true. Shmuel is difficult. Rav is also difficult, because if Rav said above that if you have 37 and a half sloyim, you become bound to give Reishis Hagez. And this teaching of Rav says you take 1/60th of that, and that's given to a Kohen. So just calculate, what's 1/60th of 37 and a half sloyim? So one thing is for sure, it's much less than 5 sloyim. Only if you wanted to talk about 1/60th of what number would give you 5, that would be, let's say, 1/60th of 300. If you took 5 times 60, you would get to 300. But Rav doesn't talk about that. Rav talks about 37 and a half sloyim. And now he's saying 1/60th of that is for Reishis Hagez, but the Mishnah said 1/60th is given to the Kohen. Here we have in our Mishnah saying 5 sloyim are given to the Kohen. The Gemara responds, Ha itmar Allah dahi. It was said concerning that source that said you give 5 sela to the Kohen, Rav Shmuel Demi Chavayu, they both say that source is not dealing with the issue of how much is given, what's the basic amount given to a Kohen. The source is dealing with something totally different. As far as the amount that's given, the basic amount that needs to be given to a Kohen, it's whatever they said above. If it's 1 sela, as Shmuel taught, or 1/60th of 37 and a half sloyim, as Rav taught, fine. What's this source talking about when it says 5? This is B'Yisrael Shiesh Lo Gizin Harbe Askinon. This is a person that has lots and lots of shearings, much more than the minimum amounts we've mentioned till now. Umevakesh Litnon L'Kohen. And he wants to give from his mountains of wool, he wants to give a portion of Reishis Hagez to a Kohen. V'Yamrino Le, and we tell him, Kol Chad V'Chad, if you have many Kohanim that you want to distribute Reishis Hagez to, so then give no less than 5 to per Kohen. So that when you're distributing a large amount of wool as Reishis Hagez, just make 5 sloyim packages. However, as far as the minimum amount that would be given to a Kohen in the event that you have a minimal amount of wool that happens to be obligated, though that was referred to in the numbers before. As far as the significance of 5 sloyim of wool, what's the significance in that number? This will be referred to a bit later. This is called something called a Nesina HaRe'uya. From 5 sloyim, you can make something from it. Make something from that amount itself, as opposed to, let's say, waiting to accumulate many different contributions of Reishis Hagez. Gufa, Rav Ushmuel. The Amrit Shavah Gufa is a reference to, we're now going to focus on something that was quoted above. Rav Shmuel, Damri Chavayu, they both say, and before going on in the sukkah, we have a title heading to the upcoming Gemara, Shi'urim Shel Truma V'Shel Peah, amounts associated with the Truma tithe and the Peah tithe. So here, the three tithes are mentioned. We already discussed Reishis Hagez. Rav Shmuel both say, Reishis Hagez B'Shishim, Truma B'Shishim, Peah B'Shishim. These three tithes have in common that 1/60th is the amount given as the tithe. So from one's wool shearings, one would give 1/60th of the Kohen. From one's harvest, one would give 1/60th of that as truma to a Kohen. And in the case of a field, payah, one would leave 1/60th of his field to the poor. The Gemara now will challenge these numbers, the number of 1/60th by Truma, and later on the 1/60th by Peah. The Gemara asks, Truma v'shishim v'ha anan t'nan. How can you say Truma is 1/60th of the harvest? We have learned in a source, Truma, ayin yofe, echad me'arboyim. The amount that a gracious person would give as Truma, if one tithed graciously, it's ayin yofe, it's 1/40th. why, if that's the proper, gracious way of tithing, why would Rav and Shmuel dictate something less? The Gemara answers, D'oraisa b'shishim, D'rabbonon barboyim. This is an answer or response that will be rejected in a minute, but for the time being, on a Torah level, one is expected to give 1/60th, and on a rabbinic level, add a little bit more, give 1/40th. The Gemara asks, but that's not accurate. D'oraisa b'shishim, to say that the Torah expects me to give 1/60th as a truma tithe, that's just not true. V'amar Shmuel, chito achas poteres esakri. Shmuel has a well-known teaching that says that one grain of wheat will exempt an entire pile of grains. The Torah doesn't give any number with regard to the truma tithe. With other tithes, for example, the meiser tithe, built into the word meiser is eser, which means 1/10. That's a different story. But in the case of truma, the Torah doesn't give any amounts, and as a result, Shmuel says even one grain dedicated or tithed as truma relieves the entire pile from any further Torah truma tithing requirement. The Gemara answers, and we have to resolve all of the numbers that we've seen quoted so far in the context of truma. Number one, Doraisa Kiddushmu. As far as the strict Torah requirement, one chita grain is sufficient. Number two, Derabonon Bidoraisa Achas Me'arboyim. The rabbinic quantity in items that are bound on a Torah level for tithing. That means not everything that grows is bound on a Torah level to be tithed. The Torah expects tithing only from Dagon, Tirosh, and Yitzhar. Dagon, grains, Tirosh, the wine, Yitzhar, oil, olive oil. So the rabbinic amount that one is expected to tithe from the Torah-bound produce, Achas Me'arboim, 1/40th. D'rabbonon b'shishim. The rabbinic requirement from all other fruits would be 1/60th. All other fruits, meaning those that are obligated only on a rabbinic level to be tithed. Peah b'shishim. This was mentioned above, that when it comes to peah, 1/60th is the amount of field that's to be left to the poor. The Gemara asks about this, V'hatanan, but haven't we learned in a Mishnah, Elu Dvarim, She'ein Lohen Shior. The following are things that have no quantity associated with them. Hapea, Vabikurim, Varayayon. We are not going to deal with Bikurim and Rayayon, just Peah for right now. So this Mishnah teaches that Peah doesn't have a Shior. So how can you say that one has to leave 1/60th of his field as Peah? The Gemara answers, D'oraisa ein lo shiur. This is true that on a Torah level, we have no percentage that's dictated. Any amount would accomplish peah. The Rabbanon b'shishim, however, the rabbis institute that you are expected to leave 1/60th of your field as peah. The Gemara asks, my komash molon, what do Rav and Shmuel tell me that I wouldn't have known from a Mishnah, Tanina? We have a Mishnah that says, Ein pochasim lepeah mishishim, afal pi she'amru hapeah ein lehem shiur. The Mishnah itself teaches that don't give less than 1/60th, even though peah on a Torah level has no formal quantity. But so we see from a Tanaic source, which is earlier, which predates Rav and Shmuel, this concept of 1/60th for peah. The Gemara answers, I still need Rav and Shmuel. Hasam ba'aretz. That source, the Mishnah, is talking about peah left from fields in the land of Israel. Hacha, Rav and Shmuel are introducing the idea of peah left from fields outside, b'chutzos, outside of Eretz Yisrael. Kisolik Isi Barhini, when Isi Barhini came to Israel, he traveled from Bavel to Israel, Ashkechei Rabbi Yochanan de Komasni Le Lebrei, Rabbi Yochanan found Isi Barhini teaching his son, teaching Mishnayos to his son. Masnim is teaching Tanaic sources, teaching Mishnayos to his son, and he mentions Rechelim. In other words, Chamesh Rechelim Gozezos with regard to Rashis, I guess. So we're focusing on, we'll say, grammar or word form in this Gemara. Omar Lei, Rabbi Yochanan says, Asne Rechelos. You should use the word Rechelos. Technically speaking, Rechelim is in the masculine, Rechelos is in the feminine, but we're really not going to focus on that aspect in this discussion, simply on the fact that they are referring to the same animal, just in a different gender form. Omar Lay, so Isi tries to justify himself against Rabbi Yochanan's comment and says, Kidichtiv, I'm using a word, Rechelim, as is found in Psukim, Rechelim Mosayim. The Pasuk says in part in Sefer Bereishis, Rechelim Mosayim. And that's why I use the Torah type word. Omar Lei, Rabbi Yochanan says, Loshon Torah la'atzmo, Loshon Chachomim la'atzmon. There is a different form that is appropriate for the Torah and a different form that's appropriate for rabbinic literature, rabbinic discussion, rabbinic literature. And therefore, don't use the word Rechelim, even though it appears in a pasuk. The accepted rabbinic form is Rechelos. But that's because there's a different standard that applies to Torah literature as opposed to rabbinic literature. Omar Lei, Rabbi Yochanan continues speaking with Isi, a recent arrival from Bavel. Man Reish Sidra B'Bavel, who is the head of the yeshiva, who is the head of the assembly today in Bavel? Omar Lei, so Isi answers, Abu Aricha. His name is Abu Aricha. Omar Lei, Rabbi Yochanan says, Abu Aricha Koris Lei. Now, Rabbi Yochanan knew who Abu Aricha was. Abu Aricha is more commonly known, more famous as Rav, the great Amora, the first generation of Amoraim, the great Amora named Rav. Calling him Abu Aricha suggests a certain level of familiarity, which in this case is not appropriate. So Rabbi Yochanan responds, Abu Aricha, of course, so you call him by his name, you should refer to him with more honor, more kavod, and call him Rav, for example. Dachirno, I remember, says Rabbi Yochanan, I remember Karavi Yasivno Achar Yud Zayin Shuros Achore de Rav Kamei de Rebbe. I remember myself sitting 17 rows behind Rebbe, who was behind Rav. Rav was 17 rows ahead of me, indicating Rav was a much greater student, sage, than I was. And he was sitting there in front of Rebbe. Rebbe, the great Tana, Rebbe Yehuda Anossi, the editor of all of the Mishnayos. V'nofik zikukin denur, mipumei de Rav, lepumei de Rebbe, mipumei de Rebbe, lepumei de Rav. And there were bolts of fire, zikukin denur, bolts of fire from going from the mouth of Rav to the mouth of Rebbe, and the mouth of Rebbe to the mouth of Rav. It was a discussion of Torah, the likes of which you never saw. V'les ano yoda mahein omrin, and I didn't even understand what they were talking about. We should point out that Rabbi Yochanan, in the course of time, became the greatest sage in the land of Israel. So it's important to appreciate this discussion in that context. And here is the great Rabbi Yochanan saying, reflecting back on the time that Rav and he were in the same yeshiva, and Rabbi Yochanan is saying, he was so great, I didn't have any clue as to what he was discussing. V'at Abu Aricha Karisle, and you call him Abu Aricha, what is he, your friend or something? Omar Lei Ihu. Isi says to Rabbi Yochanan, not as a response to what was just said, but since we're talking about Rashis, I guess, you'll see now the appropriateness of this whole appearance. Isi says, Rashis, I guess, bekamo, How much wool must one have in order for us to talk about him being obligated in this tithe? Omar lei. So Rabbi Yochanan answers, b'shishim. 60 sela. Question, v'ho anan b'kol shehen tanan. But our Mishnah says something else. So what just happened in the Gemara is Isi asks how much is to be given as rashes, how much is obligated in rashes, I guess. Rabbi Yochanan answers, and then Isi then questions Rabbi Yochanan's answer. Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan says, Im Kain, if you are questioning my answer, then ma bain li v'loch. Rashi says, Im eini yodea pirusha shem shasein yoser mimchof, I don't have an explanation for the Mishnah any better than you, mani golo mimchof, ani yesh biyodi de kolshu lav dafka. My tradition is that the kolshu expression that appears in the Mishnah is not literally any amount. Kolshu means any amount, any small amount. Elo, aydi dama rabbi doisa shura rabo. But since Rabbi Dosa, who appeared before the Chachamim in the Mishnah, gave a larger quantity, Omer Rabbanon Loshon Shiur Muat. The Rabbanon use a smaller Shiur. The Guzma Hu, and it's simply an exaggeration of what they really are saying. Umiyu Shishim Sloim Boinon. However, we do require 60 Sela in order for there to be an obligation. Kihechi delimti sela the kohen, so that you will end up with one sela to kohen, because the amount given is 1/60. The botzer miochi less than one sela is leko lamad omer de teve nesina. That wouldn't be a fulfillment of nesina, of giving, if it's less than a sela. So, therefore, the beginning amount is 60 sloim, which is an amount that can be called kol shehen in contrast with Rabbi Dosa's amount, which was much greater. Ki also Ravdimi Omar. Rashis, I guess, when Ravdimi came, he reported, quoting Rav, he says, Rav Omar Bashishim, Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yanai Omar Bashesh. Rav holds 60 sela is that minimum amount obligated in the tithe. Then Rabbi Yochanan says, in the name of Rabbi Yanai, 6. Omar le Abaye Ravdimi. Upon hearing Ravdimi's report, Abaye says, Anchis lon chado, v'akshis lon chado. With regard to one of the opinions, Anchis lon means things are good, are fine, are smooth. However, with regard to another, the other opinion that you cited, you created a question. Bishlamo de Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan lo kashyam. As far as what might appear as a contradiction in Rabbi Yochanan's, way up on the page, you can see we have a star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. The stars will connect the lines in which Rabbi Yochanan's previous opinions appeared. And we saw higher up on the sixth line from the top, Rabbi Yochanan spoke about 6 sela. We see Rabbi Yochanan speak about 60 sela, and that we saw just in the discussion he had with Isi. Here we have Rabbi Yochanan quoting Rabbi Yanai saying 6. So as far as Rabbi Yochanan and any contradiction may be concerned, lo kashya, there is no problem. Hadi day, hadi rabbe. His own opinion is 60. Rabbe, Rabbi Yanai means his rav. Rabbi Yochanan's rav's opinion, and that was Rabbi Yochanan quoting Rabbi Yanai, he says 6. So it's no contradiction. Simply, one is his own opinion, and one is he's quoting his rav's opinion. Ela de rav ad rav kashya. But with regard to rav, we have a problem. The Omar rav mono pras. Rav said, and here you can use an arrow, the arrow that you have to the right-hand side of the Gemara text, and align it with the arrow way up on the top part of the page. Rav earlier said 37 and a half sela, not what you are reporting Rav is holding, 60 sela. So Ravdimi answers, "De Rav ad Rav nami lo kashya." As far as Rav is concerned, there's no contradiction. My mona de ka Omar. The mona that Rav spoke about on the top of the omid, he said, mono pras, mona means ben arboim sloim. Not like we thought before that mona was 25, But mona over here is 40 slaim. There is a regular mona that's made of 25 sela, but in this case, there's a special mona that is measures 40 slaim. So mona upras, pras means half. 40 plus another half, 20, gets you to 60. As the Gemara says, the havelei b'shishim, that gets you to 60 instead of 37 and a half. The Gemara asks, v'toni, at the top line of kuf lamed ches omed aleph, v'toni tana mona ben arboim sloim, does the tana use an expression, do you find in Tanaic literature the word mona associated with 40 sloim? Don't forget, Rav is coming to explain the Shitas Chachamim, which is found in Mishnayos. So we're asking, in Mishnayos, do you find mona being associated with 40 sloim? The Gemara answers, in the Hatznan, we have the following source, in which you can see we've dashed underline at the end of the framed section the expression b'mona ben arboim sloim. So you have the word mona associated with 40 sloim. The source deals with a vessel, a skin vessel, skin bottle, leather container, and its ability to mekabel tuma. At what point does it become susceptible to tuma absorption? So the source says chemas chadasha, a new chemas. This is a leather container. Afalpi shemekabelas rimonim tahora. Mekabelas rimona means even though it can hold rimona, often translated as pomegranates, even though pomegranates will not fall out of it. Holes in vessels, the size of rimonim would render, if a vessel could hold a rimon, in other words, rimonim won't fall out of it, even though a vessel may have a hole in it, the vessel will be tome in general. However, over here, since you're dealing with a new one, it hasn't been, they haven't finished sewing it. They're sewing it up. They left a slit open. The slit is not wide enough for a rimon to fall out, but nevertheless, since it was never completed, it never was finished as a complete vessel, tahora, it won't be mekabel tuma. However, tofra v'nikra, if one completed the sewing up of a chemas vessel, and it then developed a rip in it, shiura kemotzi rimonim. The size of the rip is, if rimonim would fall out, then it will lose its ability to become tomei. But less than that, though it's mekabelas rimonim, since it's a completed vessel, we wouldn't describe it as Torah, but rather as something that could be mekabel tuma. Rabbi Elazar ben Yankev Omer, Kipkoyos Shoshti, the shiur of the hole for tuma purposes is the amount that would hold a ball of shti. Shti is a certain thickness of wool that's used in the weaving process. And that is achas me'arba b'mona ben arboim sloim. 1/4 of a mona that is 40 sloim. For our purposes, what we see is a tana using the term mona as associated with 40 sloim, which justifies the explanation Rav Dimi gave for Shitas Rav, with which we resolve what we thought would have been a contradiction in Rav. With that, we complete our shiur for today.